Connecting Plumbers versus City of New York and Mulhern Gas versus Mosey. Wait, we've got a couple folks coming in, please. Give them a chance to get settled.
Look like high school.
Yes. If this is John Adams High School, bienvenidos, welcome. We're thrilled to have you. I will remind all the oralists that we have future judges, lawyers, jurists, taxpayers, and voters in the well, so I'm hoping you will do your part in showing them the important work that the judiciary does. And Mr. Barron, am I pronouncing your name correctly?
That's correct.
Okay, and you are ready to begin.
Thank you, and may it please the court. Brian Barron for the appellants. This case and the next one involve regulations that use different mechanisms to produce the same effect.
So there, you see no legal difference between the two cases and the same issues, is that right?
That's correct, Judge.
Come out one way, either way, either case, we're almost certain to come out that way in the other case.
Yes, Your Honor, because the state expressly banned gas appliances and the city has admitted that it effectively banned gas appliances.
Yeah, okay.
And so in both cases as well, the district courts and defendants have all coalesced around essentially the same interpretation of EPCA to uphold the gas bans. I'd like to highlight three critical questions that interpretation leaves unanswered. First, there's no dispute that EPCA preempts expressly setting energy conservation standards for gas appliances, even at zero. For example, saying that gas water heaters can have a maximum energy use of zero. There's also no dispute.
Wait a minute, is that actually right? I mean, isn't there this whole philosophical argument about whether or not, well, it's more like a technical argument rather than a philosophical argument, but because it has to be existing and tested in a laboratory setting, it's not whether or not it's on or off, it's what its measure would be when it was operating. And so therefore it can't be zero because it's got to be tested for when it's in use. I mean, I would just be surprised if they said that there was no dispute that, because they would, I think what they would say is that that's a physical impossibility with an interpretation of the statute.
My understanding of their position, and I'll be interested to hear if that's not correct, because we made this point a couple of times at the briefing and haven't heard anything to the contrary, is that everybody agrees that under the definition in 6291.4 of energy use, and then paragraph 6 of energy conservation standard, if you prescribe a maximum energy use for an appliance, that is setting an energy conservation standard. And so there's no reason under that definition that zero would be any different from 0.0001.
Well, no, because it has to be in a particular setting, right? It has to be according to testing procedures. And so, and it has to be when it's in use, right? I mean, to me, the argument that you're, I don't want to get sidetracked because I don't know that you needed to, I got stuck on there's no dispute, whereas you still might win even if there is a dispute. So maybe I'm going to hold my questions so that I don't eat too much into your time.
I think it might help to look at, for example, 6295E sets standards for gas water heaters, oil water heaters, and electric water heaters separately. These are energy efficiency standards, but if you did the same thing for energy use, it's just, there's a number there. And I agree with you, Your Honor, that there's a process that you follow to test the energy use, to put it on a label, and there's a process that the federal government has to go through when it's setting the standard. It would not actually be able to set a standard of zero because that would violate the substantive requirements that the federal government has to establish when it's setting a standard, including by making appliances unavailable based on a performance category. So it wouldn't be able to justify such a standard, but that takes the exact same form as an energy conservation standard. There's also no dispute that EPCA preempts effectively imposing an energy conservation standard. That's the city's position, that it's energy, what's preempted is energy conservation standards or their equivalents. And so I think the unanswered question is, what distinguishes a ban on gas appliances from an energy conservation standard that says maximum energy use equals zero? There's two more unanswered questions, and those are, first, what does the building code exception do under the city's interpretation? And second, why did Congress rewrite the preemption provision if it didn't want to change its meaning in 1987? I don't think anybody in either case has come up with a satisfactory answer to those questions. And I think at the end of the day, the city's argument seems to just be that its ban is different. It works on a different sphere or axis.
What I think their argument would be is that there is a regulatory void, and that they are allowed to fill it, or states are allowed to fill it, or cities are allowed to fill it, because right now what they are doing is impeding the use of a particular type of energy. They are not set, or a type of appliance. They are not setting a standard that is lower or higher than the standard that the federal government has set.
I think that's a fair characterization of their argument, Your Honor. I think that argument is incorrect because Congress hasn't been silent in this area. Congress made a policy decision to say, we're going to try to reduce the energy consumption of appliances across the board, but we want to do so in a way that preserves consumer choice, that keeps...
Right, and so I know that a big crux of the gloss that you want us to interpret it is the idea of protecting the consumer choice. Can you tell me the part of the statute that you think is most probative of that desire or intent?
On the fuel type point specifically, I think it's 6295Q1, which requires separate standards for appliances that use different kinds of fuel. And the reason Congress did that is to ensure, I'm sorry, I see my time has expired, may I briefly?
Your time is our time. We're gonna keep you as long as we need you.
Thank you. The reason Congress did that, it's in connection with the unavailability provisions at 6295.04, and then again in the waiver at 6297D4, is Congress didn't want a general standard that would then push either electric or gas or oil appliances to be unavailable because one or the other couldn't meet that standard. For some appliances, electric might be more efficient. For other appliances, gas might be more efficient. And that's why Congress required there to be separate standards. So that's why in 6295E, the water heater standards are broken down based on fuel type. All of the federal standards are like that, because 6295Q1 requires them to be set that way. So Congress wanted there to be separate standards by fuel type precisely to avoid the standards making appliances that use a particular kind of energy unavailable. Congress didn't want to take that off the market, and it makes sense then that it preempted.
Well, what do we do about, how far is that willing to go? Are we not going to allow states to regulate kerosene lamps in highly crowded areas? Are kilns, where is the limiting principle?
So on the kerosene specifically, there needs to be a federal standard, and there isn't. So those just aren't, because what triggers preemption is that it's got to be a covered product for which there's a federal standard. I think the best place to see the limiting principle is through the many cases on similar relating to preemption provisions. The reference to or connection with test with ERISA basically says to look at what Congress is trying to accomplish with this preemption provision. Under the connection with prong, look at what the state or local government is actually doing, what it does, not just the framing, and compare that to what Congress is trying to do. Does it make a significant impact on Congress's preemption-related objectives? And I think in this context specifically, the closer you are to regulating the appliance, the more likely that is to be preempted. Regulations that only indirectly affect an appliance are less likely to be preempted. Now, of course, that doesn't mean you could just...
Okay, well, how indirect is it by not actually regulating the appliance, but regulating the kind of building that can be built? right? I mean, I thought you weren't going to say that. I thought you were going to say that concerning is so broad that it we should understand something beyond the fact that it that the appliance needs to be done in terms of testing procedures. So maybe you can help me with that argument.
So I think where you have an effective ban on the appliance, that is, I don't think that has any practical difference from a zero.
Okay, well, the part that I'm struggling with is that you conceded a moment ago, or at least acknowledged a moment ago, that the further afield one went to directly banning something, it would be more acceptable for states to regulate. But you just used the word an effective ban. And so when does something become so indirect that it is regulable versus when is something enough of an effective ban that it's banned? Like, this seems to me a much more of a line drawing than I thought we were going to be engaged in. So maybe you can help me out.
Maybe I'll try an example of what would not be preempted. And that's declining to extend the gas distribution network. The downstream effect of that, of course, is some people are not going to be able to get gas, and therefore they can't use gas appliances.
Well, let me ask again. Can you, I mean, the effect of it, the examples are helpful because they're helping us think of what we of what the scenarios might be, but we actually are going to need to put words on paper. So I'm asking you to help me. What would the standard be that would be appropriately respecting the position that I think you just said was okay, which is if it's really far afield of a direct regulation or a direct impediment, it's regulable, but an effective ban would be improper. What are we supposed to say? What is the word that distinguishes the improper regulable versus the properly regulable?
So I don't know that you're going to be able to write a bright line test that speaks to all the facts. I think that it's very much like ERISA and the other relating to preemption cases, where there's never going to be one case that will just have a super bright line rule that distinguishes on the facts which regulations are preempted or not. I think you take the text, regulation concerning the energy use of a covered appliance, and I think you could apply the reference to or connection with test from ERISA, but ultimately it is going to depend on the context of each case. So the factual context and what it is that the state or local government is actually doing. That's WAS against EMA. The Supreme Court said that's, you know, you can't frame your way out of preemption. You need to look at what it is that the regulation does here.
Good. Okay. We're going to hear from you again.
Thank you, Your Honor.
And I'll just say we've gotten even more students from John Adams High School here. So again, bienvenidos, welcome. You are welcome to proceed, Mr. Roberts.
Good morning, Your Honor. I see the clock is set to 7, I believe. Yeah, there we go. All right. Good morning, Your Honor. Charles Roberts for the United States. I want to pick up where we just left off there. I think one interpretive tool that has been helpful to me in thinking about these cases is to combine the definitions in the statute of energy use and energy itself. And so under 62913, energy use means the quantity of energy. And under 62914, energy means electricity or fossil fuels. So energy use means the quantity of fossil fuels directly consumed by a consumer product at point of use determined in accordance with the test procedures. There's no dispute here. I agree with appellants that there's no dispute here. I don't understand the city to dispute that effectively Local Law 154 sets the permissible quantity of fossil fuels in products subject to federal standards to zero. So I think that helps clarify that this is not an edge case. It doesn't require the court to sort of chart the meets and bounds of preemption under this provision and all of the hypotheticals that are useful, I agree, are useful to figure out the scope of this preemptive provision, but aren't necessary for the court to decide in this particular case.
Well, what am I supposed to do with that interpretation in accordance with test procedures? Like, how does that work?
The test procedures are set out in DOE regulations, and they're described in 6293.
Right, but how can those ever be zero?
how can they?
Like, why does the number zero work? Like, if that is a, like, how will there ever be a situation in which these particular appliances be zero in a test procedure?
So the way that a manufacturer would try to comply with the test procedures and local law 154, I think, demonstrates that it's preempted. A manufacturer cannot comply with local law 154 and turn the thing on.
How would the manufacturer test the product? On ambient air?
No, they would test it in accordance with its design specifications.
Right, and so they put the fossil fuel in and they test it.
Yes, that is how the product is meant to be used. That's its function or performance, and that's
But if the allowable amount of fossil fuel is zero, how do they test it?
They would not be able to operate it under local law 154. That demonstrates why.
I understand that, but how is it preempted under the technical definitions in the statute? How do they test it? To Judge Perez's earlier questions to your colleague.
So the manufacturer would still be able to test, they can test the product however they normally test the product. The question then is whether or not.
But how could the number be set to zero and be tested, right? Like, you're saying that they are setting a standard to zero, and I think their response would be the way the statute is set up, energy use cannot be the number zero because energy use is what the number is in a testing procedure when it is being operable.
No, it's the maximum quantity of energy directly consumed by the product, and they have set that at zero. And whether or not you're able to test that in manufacturer in laboratory settings, regardless of their particular regulation out in the real world.
You take it out into the air and you see if it works, and if it doesn't work, then it's zero. That's testing it with zero, is with no gas, no nothing, right?
If you didn't plug it in, if you didn't turn it on, its energy use would be zero, and that's what the local law has required of these products, right. These products subject to a federal standard. In the context where the local law 154 applies. I do want to highlight, I see my time is up, in aiding the court in some of the questions that I heard in the prior exchanges, EPCA's focus on consumer choice, I think, derives from 6295Q1, which my friend mentioned, 6295.04. Also, we think in setting standards, directs the Department of Energy to consider consumer choice and preserving that. 6297D4, the waiver restrictions also, we think, go towards consumer choice. And then to the extent the court finds it helpful, the legislative history.
I expected you to start or lead with the waiver provision, but I'm wondering, is a plausible read or perhaps a better read that Congress simply didn't think that energy conservation goals standing alone provided a sufficient reason to disrupt the market? I mean, why do we have to read that as Congress didn't mean to meant to bar any kind of regulation from impacting the marketing of this product?
I don't think it bars, along the lines of the exchanges earlier, I don't think that it bars any regulation that has an incidental impact on the marketing of the products. What D4 demonstrates is that DOE itself can't set a standard or waive preemption in the context where a state or local regulation makes entirely unavailable a class of products. And that's the stated and intentional and effective goal of Local Law 154 is to prohibit this class of products. So D4 demonstrates that regulations that accomplish that effective ban are subject to preemption. That's the presumption. If you're considering whether you have to waive preemption, that preemption applies. And then makes clear that Congress didn't want DOE, even DOE, to be able to waive that preemption in that context. So I think that preserves consumer choice as well, if there are no further questions.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court. Rebecca Vizquez for the City of New York. EPCA preempts state and local regulations concerning the energy efficiency, energy use, or water use of covered appliances. Those are defined statutory terms that are ways of measuring products' energy and water consumption. They are fixed metrics determined by specified test procedures that are placed on product labels before products can be sold. Local Law 154 has nothing to do with those metrics.
Well, can I ask, though, I just want to make sure that we are all thinking about this appropriately. I assume that you would not dispute that a city regulation setting an energy use at an unobtainable limit would be preempted under the statute. Is that right?
Right.
Okay, so does the fact that your regulation achieves essentially the same result as that hypothetical that I just gave you mean anything? What does that do?
No, because what Congress, what the city's law is doing is regulating based on the type of fuel that is used, not the quantity of energy that an appliance consumes.
But you just said that if you had set the energy at an unobtainable limit, that would be preempted. So why isn't this a version of setting it at an unobtainable limit, zero, which we agree is unobtainable, or at least right now, let's assume we agree that it's unobtainable?
Because what Congress was seeking to preempt was energy conservation standards that would do that, would set something at an impossible level to meet. This is not what Local Law 154 is doing. Local Law 154 is agnostic as to energy use.
Well, what do we do about the fact that some electronic appliances actually have worse energy?
I mean, that proves the point that there's no inherent connection between the fuel source and the energy consumption. This isn't a situation like this court addressed in Metropolitan Taxi Cab, where you're using one term as a proxy for another term. They don't overlap the same way that hybrid and fuel efficient did in that case. The type of fuel that a product uses doesn't necessarily correspond with its energy consumption. Electric resistance heating, like baseboard heating and electric furnaces, requires a lot of electricity. But Local Law 154 has nothing to say about that. The fact that Congress was concerned about conflicting or a patchwork of state regulations about the quantity of energy that a product consumes does not reflect any broader intent to prevent states and localities from regulating appliances and sources of energy on other grounds.
Well, what do we do about point of use then?
Point of use is another statutory term that, again, as Your Honor was getting at in your questions to the other side, it reflects the conditions that tests have to be done under, that it refers to a specific average use cycle, and point of use is also a term that was long understood to mean the energy that a product consumes in its operation, as opposed to before the in the production of the energy for it to get to that point where it's installed.
It has to do with how you measure the energy used, right?
Yes, yes. But it does not reflect anything that has to do with the ability to actually operate a product for some reason other than the amount of energy that it consumes. Plaintiffs' arguments hinge on replacing the statutory definition of energy use with a colloquial interpretation that's just the use of energy. But under their reading, virtually anything that affects the use of an EPCA-covered product could be preempted, leaving states and localities with little authority.
That is that's a dangerous argument, because if that's what the statute means, if the statute means what they say it means, then if Congress wasn't thinking it through, that's not on us. Somebody's going to have to take it up to Congress. So I would urge you to focus on why you think your reading is the best version of the statute, because, you know, we're not really going to be in a position of determining whether or not we thought Congress made a good policy judgment. So why do you think that we should wade into a circuit split when the Ninth Circuit has already provided a definition of a point of use that is different than the one that you are offering?
Because the Ninth Circuit panel's definition of point of use and energy use is different than what's on the face of the statute itself. The Ninth Circuit's interpretation and plaintiff's interpretation requires ignoring that statutory definition of energy use. because that, as Your Honor was recognizing, the energy use is not the ability to use energy in a broad sense, but a fixed measure of energy consumption. That is the term that Congress used, and its definition makes plain that the legislative intent here was to preempt state laws that would concern those fixed measures of energy consumption that were set by the federal government.
Do you think the word concerning suggests something broader than that?
No. The word concerning does ensure that the preemption provision gets at things that might not be literally worded as this is a limit on how much energy this particular product can consume. But it does not, this case doesn't turn on the meaning of the word concerning, because even if plaintiffs are right and it means exactly the same thing as related to, that still is, it has to be something that has a connection with the preempted subject matter. And that is not what Local Law 154 does. It's pulling a different lever, it's operating on a different axis, and even though the effect might be that you can't colloquially use products that are subject to federal energy conservation standards, it's not preventing their use because of those energy conservation standards.
So is how much of this, or how much of your argument depends upon us understanding concerning to mean a particular set of words?
Nothing.
Okay, so at this point you would concede that as to their definition of what concerning means, related to?
Yes.
Okay, so do you want to talk about why you think the ERISA case, what role or interpretive role that the ERISA cases play in this for us?
I think that those, again, just use the definition of related to that that is found to mean that it has a connection with the preempted subject matter, or something turns upon the preempted subject matter. And that's, we're just not in that world here. Local Law 154 does not concern energy use. It doesn't have anything to do with energy use as defined in EPCA. It doesn't matter how efficient a gas appliance could be, as Your Honors were suggesting, that if it operates by combusting fossil fuel, then it is not allowed to operate under this law. It doesn't, there's no testing procedure that could produce an energy efficiency level that nothing, it doesn't work together. And if an appliance does not operate by combusting fossil fuel, then it's unaffected by the city's law. I see that my time is almost up. I think that ultimately this is a case that turns on the definition of energy use, which plaintiffs are urging you to ignore entirely.
You still haven't explained why this is not setting the energy use to zero, and if it is, why it is permissible under the statute. So if you could spend some time on that.
It is not setting an energy use limit of zero, because it doesn't matter what an appliance's energy use is. The law is agnostic as to that. What matters is how the appliance is powered, how the appliance or building system is powered. As some of the questions we're getting at, electric appliances and building systems still use energy. We are operating on a different axis and a different regulatory sphere, as Your Honor suggested. This is something where the federal government has not taken action. Congress has not enacted a law saying that states and localities are not allowed to ban particular fuel sources. What they have done is something different.
But what do you do about the textual evidence they suggest that of Congress intending to preserve some amount of consumer choice over what appliances they use? I mean, would you dispute that that was one of the goals of the statute? Would you say that it is a subservient goal, and where in the text? What do we do about that argument?
I would say that the examples they point to are evidence that Congress was concerned about energy conservation standards leading to product unavailability in the market. But that doesn't reflect any broader concern about market availability for other reasons.
And that's exactly why it's not a problem that at plaintiff well,
what about
can't.
What about the waiver provision that limited the DOE's ability to grant waivers and said that you couldn't be granted to one that would effectively run a covered product out of the market?
So the effect of that waiver provision is just to ensure that states, along with the Department of Energy itself, cannot adopt energy conservation standards themselves that would have that effect. And that is what Congress's concern was. They did not want this particular goal, this energy conservation standard setting process, to lead to product and feature unavailability. But that doesn't mean that there is any basis to see an intent to avoid that on other for other reasons.
Okay, before you sit down, I want to ask what you think the Franklin case means for this case and for preemption generally, preemption doctrine.
About whether there is a presumption against preemption. I think that we don't think that this court needs to address that here because we don't think there's any need to rely on a presumption here. The meaning of the preemption provision in this case is clear, but as this court, Your Honor, recently ruled, where the preemptive force of the text is ambiguous, then that ambiguity should be resolved against preemption. And again, we don't think the text here is ambiguous. We think that the definition of energy use makes it clear that Local Law 154 does not concern that subject matter. But if this court disagrees on that count and thinks that it is not as clear as we do, then it should resolve that ambiguity in the city's favor.
If we were to find that the ban does effectively set an energy conservation standard of zero, can you still prevail?
I mean, I think yes, largely for the reasons that you were questioning about the impossibility of that. That I think it would be difficult to see how that would actually be an energy conservation standard. But I think our strongest argument is that Local Law 154 is agnostic as to energy use. It does not set an energy conservation standard or anything concerning energy use as it's defined in EPCA.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'd like to pick up where we just left off. Page one of the city's brief says that regulations that would effectively impose energy conservation standards, whether in form or in function, are preempted. So if it's effectively zero, the city has already conceded from the very first page of its brief that the law is preempted. I'd also like to pick up on something I heard my friend on the other side say about what concerning does in the statute. I think it was that it catches laws that are not literally worded as a limit on how much energy you can use. That fits the city's law to a T. The city...
Well, I'm sorry, let me stop you there. I'm not sure that that's what I heard, but I do want to make sure, because it's really important, that I understand your concerning argument. What work for your case do you think concerning does?
I think concerning determines the relationship between the preempted subject matter, which is energy use, energy efficiency, or water use of a covered appliance, and what is actually preempted. So it does the work that relating to does in those preemption provisions. It means it's not just a direct regulation of energy use, not just a direct energy conservation standard.
How does the local law concern relate to anything about energy conservation, the terms of the statute? How does concerning or relating to help you there?
Because it doesn't set an energy conservation standard as literally worded, but it does effectively the same thing. And with just as with relating to, that word is a signal from Congress to broad preemption. You have to look at what the law actually does in its practical effect. And what it does is the same effect as expressly setting an energy
conservation standard. Local law does not have anything to do with energy efficiency. not concerning, not relating to, not nothing, doesn't it?
I agree that the city doesn't care how efficient the appliances are, but it also, among the preempted subject matter, is energy use. How much energy does an appliance use? If an appliance, as tested, as labeled, uses more than zero energy, and it's a gas appliance, and that's the starting point of the standard. You set a standard for a gas appliance separately from electric, and so you take a gas appliance, test it under the prescribed procedures, label it. The city's law effectively asks, is that number greater than zero? If so, you can't use the appliance. That's the same thing an energy conservation standard does. I think what is maybe a more helpful statement of the rule, I think, that would decide this case and might help with Your Honor's question about deciding future cases as well. A regulation with a significant impact on an appliance's energy use is preempted. I think that's what you get from putting the ERISA test into...
Okay, so you think that the word... I just want to make sure I understand the doctrinal argument, because this is a big case and we need to get it right. But you think the word concerning means that we focus less on the definition of energy, which is defined as consumed by a consumer product at point of use, determined in accordance with test procedures under section 6293, and instead understand concerning to mean that regulation with a significant impact on a covered product. Is that right?
No, not on a covered product, on a covered product's energy use. So take that definition, and what is preempted are regulations concerning appliances' energy use as defined in the statute.
And what is the best case that you have that you would think would justify or support that definition or understanding of concerning?
I think the best case is Roe. It explains that under the connection with prong of the ERISA test, which is there applied to the FAA Authorization Act, connection with at least covers regulations with a significant impact on Congress's preemption-related objectives. That's 552 U.S. at 370 to 71. And the facts of the case are also, I think, quite helpful here, because it illustrates you can't just do indirectly what you can't do directly. I think it's very similar to regulating combustion when you know you can't expressly set the energy use to be zero.
Okay, well, we'll hear from you very soon. So,
thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.